Good morning, everybody. It is October 21st, 2021. This is the ADK Homeroom. I am your host, Frank. And today it is a brisk, fine autumn day here in the Adirondacks. We had soccer yesterday with the little kids, played some World Cup. My kids were on Mexico and Germany. Sorry, no, Mexico and Italy. Yeah, and it was fantastic. Fantastic day of soccer. More soccer coming up this weekend. Also, we got an owl walk coming up this weekend. Going to hopefully hear some owls, maybe even see some owls. My one son has his dark vision goggles ready to go. Looking forward to a hike this weekend. And, of course, more soccer. What do we have today for you, though? Well, we had quite an interesting day yesterday, didn't we, with the announcement of the kids' vaccines coming out, with the announcement by the American Association of Pediatrics that there is a mental health crisis among adolescents, as if we even needed to hear that from them, but it's nice to have them on board. And then we also had a really interesting article, which is going to be the main focus here, from Joseph G. Allen, professor at Harvard, published in the Washington Post yesterday. And it's great. Well, 90% of it is great. Anyway, the basic thesis of this article is that we need to end mask mandates for kids in school by January 1st at the latest. Could be earlier. Absolutely could be earlier, according to this professor from Harvard. And that's even if a kid doesn't choose to take advantage of the new vaccination policies allowing kids to be vaccinated. So I want to talk about this article and the 90% of it that is great and the 10% that isn't great. First of all, just notice that this is different. Earlier this year, right at the start of the school year, right, you had that great piece coming out from Macquarie at Tufts in Boston, Tufts Pediatric Hospital, and another professor from Johns Hopkins came out in the Wall Street Journal talking about how it is abusive to mask kids at school. Well, you know, those guys did not maybe get quite as much attention. For one, they're publishing in the Wall Street Journal. For another, they had been vocally protesting the institution of mask mandates throughout the pandemic because they hurt kids, right? And we know this, and of course they're right, but it's easy for other people to dismiss them, perhaps people on the blue side of things maybe, to dismiss these professors because they were, you know, writing from the Wall Street Journal, a known hostile to the blue side of things. So Macquarie and Meissner, that's the name of the other guy. Meissner, I think, is from Tufts and Macquarie is from Johns Hopkins. So they're easy to be dismissed. But J.G. Allen here, Joe apparently he goes by, Joe Allen has been not a known hostile to the blue side of things. He's been supportive of many of the masking requirements, and the Washington Post obviously is a far cry from the Wall Street Journal. Washington Post, a bastion of neoliberalism. So for Professor Allen to be publishing in the Washington Post a piece that says no matter if a kid's vaccinated or not, he needs to be allowed to take off his mask in school by January 1st at the latest, this is a big deal. Big deal. We'll get into all the great things in the article in a second. First, I'm going to do three things, actually. One, I'm going to talk about right now, technical note, the 10% that's not great about the article. Then the second part, we'll talk about the 90% that is great about the article. And the last thing we'll talk about is the reaction on Twitter and the reaction in social media. Because as you may guess, Professor Allen is getting raked over the coals, savaged. Although he has some support in some places too, so there is hope. That'll come up third. First, let's start with this. And I almost hesitate to do this because it's such a good article, but I have to pick out this one thing because it is such a typical example of how horrible the support for masking is, right? So it's great, you know, the main point of the topic is great. Joe does a good job here. But then at the end of the paper, he says, this isn't about whether masks work. They do. Okay, so I'm reading this with an open mind, and I'm thinking, all right, this article was published yesterday, October 20th, 2021. Maybe there's some great new stuff out here. Let's click on this link, because they do is a hyperlink. Let's click on it, and let's see what this evidence that masks work is. There's got to be some coming, right? Because I really do think that masks probably do have some beneficial effect, right? But the question is whether that slight beneficial effect outweighs the tremendous costs involved with mandated masking. And I'm always waiting to see, because it's got to come at some point, this evidence that the masks do help at least a little bit. It's got to be out there at some point. So I click on they do. And when I click on they do, it takes me to a USA Today article. And I'm thinking, okay, so Joe, you're going to support that masks work by taking me to a USA Today article? I was expecting something maybe, you know, from the New England Journal of Medicine or from epidemiology journals or something, but USA Today? Okay. Then I noticed that the author of this USA Today article is Joe Allen, co-author, and I'm like, oh, well, okay. You know, he's wants me to see what else he wrote on this topic. And within this article, surely there will be links. And then I noticed that this article is dated October 2020. So that's a little bit of a red flag, right? Red flag meme, red flag, red flag, red flag. But I'm wondering, okay, maybe. So October 2020, that's a year ago. So this isn't the most recent data. And I'm pretty sure that I'm up on all the stuff that happened up until, well, now. But okay, keeping an open mind. So the first link supporting that masks work takes me to a USA Today article by the same professor. All right, let's read down through here. So I start scrolling through it, and it gets to the first section here after some boilerplate introductory paragraphs that aren't really about science. Then it says, what does the latest evidence on masks show? Latest evidence, and this article is a year old, but okay, whatever. What does the latest evidence on masks show? And there's a bolded statement right under that says, we have lab testing and studies from other viruses showing that simple masks can help. Okay, let's see those studies. So then there's a link there, and I click on that link to see what studies are supporting this idea from October 2020 that says that we have lab studies and tests from other viruses that show that simple masks can help. All right, where does that link take you? Well, gets a little better. It still doesn't go to an actual science paper. We're three layers deep now, and we still haven't reached an actual science paper. But it does take you to a policy advising technical guidance statement from the Royal Society, right? The Royal Society over in Britain, they're pretty famous. If you're FRS, Fellow of the Royal Society, that's a big deal. It's the British National Academy of the Sciences. It's been around since 1660. It is a very well-respected science establishment, science society. So at least we're there. It's not an actual study yet, but we're in a technical guidance document published by a scientific society, at least. We're getting better than Washington Post to USA Today. Finally, on the third layer, we're actually, you know, at a science place. So let's see what it says. So you read through there, and, you know, it's advising laymen and policymakers on what to do. And right there on page one, it says, this is a quote, cloth face coverings are effective in reducing source virus transmission. Okay. Cloth, mask, face coverings, reducing source virus transmission. And then right there, key point in the executive summary, quote, the cloth masks for the general public are effective, period. Okay. All right. So cloth face coverings in community public use, general public use, community masking settings are effective, right? So we're talking about cloth. We're talking about public. We're talking about community mask use. We're talking about reducing source virus transmission. Okay. Got it. Let's scroll down through this document and see what science studies the British National Academy of Sciences, the Royal Society, is going to cite in support of their statements here, their key findings and their executive summaries. Well, we start reading through. Oh, very nice. Table of contents comes up right away, and it doesn't even make us go far. Right on page 5, it says in page 5 in table of contents, it talks about community masking and the benefits thereof. So let's jump to page 5, supposed to be about community masking, supposed to be about cloth masks and source control and all the stuff that's in the key finding executive summary. So the first thing you notice about page 5 is most of it's just a giant picture showing you different types of masks. Okay, whatever. It's just going to proceed from page 5. No problem. We go to the bottom of page 5. There's some text there. And it starts by saying, oh, we're aware that many people complain that there are no randomized control trials, RCTs, showing the effectiveness of face masks in the community setting for COVID-19, and it says, well, that's because RCTs are very challenging. And it says there are other experts in the field who say the same thing we do. You know, don't just take it for our word. Don't just take our word for it. Also listen to other experts who say RCTs are really hard, but we urgently call for community masking. You know, that's not evidence, but whatever. It's an appeal to peers, I guess. All right, keep reading. Finally, in the next paragraph, it actually talks about a science study. So that would be the fourth layer, right? You've got the Washington Post, then you've got the USA Today, then you've got the Royal Society Technical Guidance Advisory Document, and then on the fourth layer below that is finally the science. We've drilled down here. What does the Royal Society say about this science study? Okay, well, the first piece of evidence, their big, strong piece of evidence that they lead off with is a recent study that identified 10 RCTs that examined the effectiveness of face masks on reducing the influenza virus infection in the community, infection rate in the community from 1946 to 2018. Okay, we're talking it's not the right virus and it's old, but there are RCTs here with actual data, so maybe they're good. And then you actually look at it, it doesn't distinguish by type of masks. So forget about just cloth masks. And this is just in the Royal Society's summary of it too. They even acknowledge this. It doesn't distinguish type of mask, so it's not really about cloth masking. And they don't separate masks from washing your hands. They include hand hygiene with the mask use, so you can't separate the two. And the Royal Society even acknowledges this, and yet that's the first thing they cite as a science study in support of their executive summaries, the saying that community cloth masking in general is effective for source control. And it isn't just this thing they cite isn't about cloth masks. It can't separate masks from washing your hands, so it absolutely does not support that. It's not even close. All right, but, you know, whatever. We'll just keep going on here, right? And then they say, the Royal Society even says this. The Royal Society says the authors conclude that there was no significant reduction in influenza transmission with the use of face masks. Huh. I mean, that's the opposite of what your executive summary statement. I'll read it again. This is a quote from the Royal Society discussing the study that they cited. The authors conclude that there was no significant reduction in influenza transmission with the use of face masks. That's a quote. And that's supposed to be supporting this idea that is in their key finding in their executive summary, that cloth masks in general used by the public for source control are effective. It's just gaslighting. It's the opposite of what they're saying. It makes no sense. I'm not making this up. Go read it. Go read the article. You have to drill down 4 layers, like I said, or really only 3 layers to get to the Royal Society, because they're the ones who say the authors support this. Now, they try to justify themselves because their next sentence is they say, oh, well, the authors say that most studies here were underpowered because of limited sample size. So they're trying to say, yeah, the authors conclude that there was no significant reduction in influenza transmission with the use of face masks, but the studies were underpowered. Okay, well then why is it in your document then? If you really think these studies are underpowered, you should throw out the author's conclusion that there's no significant reduction from face masks. If you think that, then why include it? Why is it here in your guidance supporting your key finding? I don't know. It makes no sense. Maybe you're supposed to be just trying to keep an open mind and saying some evidence points this way, some evidence points that way, but that's not what's in your executive summary. That's not what anybody citing your technical guidance is citing it for. They're citing it for support of the idea that community masks work. And yet you're here with the exact opposite statement, and then you say, oh, well, these studies were underpowered. It makes no sense, folks. And nobody's calling them out on this. Nobody's calling out Joe Allen and saying, look, Dr. Joe, why is your supposed evidence for the fact that community masks work this ultimately, when you drill down through three or four layers, why is it ultimately go back to this thing that says the authors concluded there was no significant reduction in influenza transmission with the use of face masks? Why? Nobody's asking them that. It tasks me, like Herman Melville in The Great White Whale. It tasks me. All right. So then, all right, but maybe, you know, maybe the next one will be good, right? This technical guidance from the Royal Society does go on. It does have some more studies that it cites. So let's go on and keep seeing what we can see. All right. Surely the next link is going to be fantastic, right? Okay, so we flip over to page 6, the next study cited to support their position. And this one starts, the Royal Society quotes this study saying, wearing a face mask slightly reduces the odds of infection by the wearer by around 6%. Okay, small effect, and that's not source control because they're talking about the wearer getting infected here. But that is an effect, seems to support their position. But then actually, if you go to the end of this paragraph where the Royal Society is citing this study, the Royal Society says, a major limitation was that the type of face mask was rarely explicitly stated, and the authors had to infer masks were of surgical grade, leaving no indication of the effectiveness of cloth or non-surgical masks or coverings for the general public. Are you kidding me? Did you hear that? Are you kidding me? The Royal Society, you don't even have to go to the actual science paper for this. The Royal Society themselves, at the end of this is their second big piece. Their first one, useless. Their second one, 0-2. Because when they start out, it's looking promising, reduces the odds of infection caused by the wearer around 6%. And then at the end of the paragraph, they say, oh, but wait, we don't know if these were cloth masks or not. We don't know if this was, you know, community, general public masks that you buy made out of, you know, your jeans or whatever. This is 0-2. Okay. Two studies, no support. Okay. And this is what, you know, our professors at Harvard are linking to. But it actually is worse than that. It's actually worse than that because this second paragraph here, if you look up the actual paper by Brainerd over at East Anglia professor, if you look up what they are saying in the paper, here's an actual quote from the paper. The evidence is not sufficiently strong to support widespread use of face masks as a protective measure against COVID-19. That's what the actual science paper says. I'll read it again. I'm not making this up. Go look it up. Brainerd et al., right? A bunch of other people, professor at East Anglia in the UK. This is the paper that is quoted in this technical guidance document that says that, you know, I read it to you, the cloth masks are effective for general public use. And here's the quote in this paper, the second science paper that is cited. Quote is, the evidence is not sufficiently strong to support widespread use of face masks as a protective measure against COVID-19. Come on, this is crazy. We're being gaslit here. It literally says the opposite of what the people citing the paper are trying to support. There's no other way to put it. It says the opposite of what's being promulgated as the supposed point of these papers. They say the opposite. Ugh. That's the second one. All right, look at the third one here. Now, the third one has Chandra McIntyre in it, right, which is absolutely fantastic. She was like the only one doing this work before COVID. Her work, mostly, by the way, before COVID, found no great effect from masks, no big effect. And she even had to go back and put, because of political pressure, I assume, had to go back and put a few notes on her old papers saying, well, don't interpret it this way. Don't interpret it that way. It doesn't mean that, you know, masks for COVID might not be useful. We should all be masking up. Just because I have all these old papers on these other diseases and I couldn't find a real big effect from masking doesn't mean that we shouldn't all be wearing masks for COVID. You know, she had to go back and put some notes like that on there. Okay, but let's look at this particular study. It's a new one from her in the spring of, well, new at this, because that's the other thing. Joe Allen couldn't even be bothered to update his evidence. There have been a bunch of other mass studies that have come out in the last year, but he's still quoting back to October 2020, and then this paper goes back to the spring of 2020 when McIntyre and her colleagues did a quick review of, I think it was from February through April in 2020. And here's the thing, it's not even a community study, right? Right? What Allen and what the British Royal Society are supposed to be talking about are community studies. And in fact, this paper here, the third one that they talk about, isn't in the community. It's just families and it's household contacts, right? So even if you do find some effect with masks in a household, this is people you're living with constantly within 1 meter of at the dinner table. Does that necessarily mean that the mask is going to have a significant effect when you're in a store, you know, down at Publix shopping, when you're Eckert buying some sunglasses, going in and out of there? How on earth can you equate those two situations? They're not the same conditions. And the other thing about this McIntyre thing, and McIntyre's studies before were good, and this study is all right too as far as it goes, but it is a survey. This survey is, you know, surveys are things that social scientists laugh about, right? This is middle school type level stuff. They just asked people, did you do this? Did you do that? That is not scientific, guys. It's better than nothing. I will say a survey is better than nothing. Absolutely true. You got some data there. But how reliable is it really when you're just asking people, did you do this? Did you do that? What was your experience with this? What was your experience with that? Surveys are not especially trustworthy, right? They're just not. So we need to move on to our next piece here, but I just had to point that out, that as good as the rest of this article is, Joe Allen's doing a great thing here. He's arguing for the right thing. But when he says that masks work and then he links to this year-old USA Today article that then links to this Royal Society, and it does have some other links in it too, but this is the main link that gets to science. It's the first one that comes up under the science, you know, linking to science stuff and answering the question, what evidence do we have? And this is not evidence. It's just not. Sometimes it literally says the opposite of what people quoting it say that it says. And we need to call out our intellectual class on that. We need to be saying, hey, you are wrong. This is crap. Don't do this. Right? People say, oh, why don't people listen to the scientists? Why don't people just follow the experts' advice? Because experts are sometimes doing crap. All right, enough about that. Let's talk about the good stuff in this article. So, and there is plenty of it, right? Joe Allen lets them have it. This is a great thing. So one of the things he starts off with is just what we have said forever. It's time to set dates for ending masking in schools. Yeah, those dates should have been about 18 months ago, but whatever. And then he points out the risk to kids is extremely low. He quotes this number, and he seems to think that people will be shocked by it. He says, even in New England, the hospitalization rate, here it is. The hospitalization rate for kids under 17 is 7 kids out of every 10 million kids. 7 per 10 million for kids under 17. Well, yeah. I mean, that doesn't shock me, but I guess there are a bunch of people out there who still think that this disease is a threat to children. I mean, and sure, it's a threat, but so are, you know, meteors are a threat to kids, right? Carbon monoxide poisoning is a threat to kids. Choking on your food is a threat to kids. The point is that COVID is less of a mortal threat to kids than influenza. Absolutely is, especially if you limit it to just otherwise healthy kids, right? If you limit it to kids who are otherwise healthy, then COVID is way down there. So Joe Allen does a great thing pointing this out to the readers of the Washington Post. Great job there. 7 kids under 17 per 10 million. Right. And then he goes on and he points out that the hospitalization rate is dropping. Even with the Delta surge in Florida, the hospitalization rate at its maximum was only 1 out of 100,000 for kids. 1 out of 100,000 for kids. And that was at the max surge in Florida of Delta. Since then, it has dropped way down. It's close to 1 in a million again. And then Joe does another great thing, and he points out those are actually overestimates, because he talks about how the CDC is basically incompetent and can't be bothered to get its data right. And its models are not worth the paper that they're printed on. And he doesn't quite go as far as saying that the CDC should be burnt to the ground and turned into a Tim Hortons, but he, you know, you can tell that's what he's thinking. If he's a Tim Hortons fan, though, I don't know. He's in Boston, right? So what are people in Boston like, maybe? Probably like seafood. What's that fancy seafood chain? Legal Seafood, is it? Yeah, they probably like, he probably wants to burn the CDC to the ground and put up that. I would vote for Tim Hortons myself, but hey. Degustabon non est disputandum, or non disputandum est, however Latin does it. There's no accounting for taste. All right, so then he goes on, and Joe Allen stakes out an even more controversial position among the blue staters out there. He goes out and he says, you know what? Vaccines are coming for kids, but guess what? Even if you don't have a vaccine mandate in place for kids, and there are some kids coming into to school without the vaccine, even in that case, we have to remove the mask mandate for kids. Fantastic. And he says it needs to happen by January 1st or earlier. So like tomorrow, right? Tomorrow would be a good day. And he says, he points out that there's a difference between this year and last year. I was just talking about this with some people on Twitter. They don't seem to understand this. Last year, it sort of made sense. You could at least make the argument that delaying tactics were reasonable because the vaccines were on the horizon. The vaccines were just around the corner. We were coming up on them. And so if you could slow some transmission rates, if you could delay the number of people that were getting infected, if you could reduce the number of people infected per day, then that had a lot of value, because when the vaccines came, it'll all be done, and then fewer people will have contracted the virus overall, fewer people will have died overall. Huh. But now this year, right, we have the vaccines in place. There is nothing coming up around the corner that is going to be a fundamental game changer like the vaccines in place. So this year, even more than last year, much more than last year, if you are delaying, if you're into some sort of delay tactic where you want to cut down transmission rates to a level that is lower than what they are, but still not, you know, going to give that fabled R naught to below one where everything's going to die out. If you're not doing that, if you are doing that sort of delaying tactics, what are you waiting for? There's nothing coming up. that is going to be a game changer. The vaccines are here and the transmission is still occurring. Because the transmission is still occurring, even with the vaccines here, then the value of delaying things really drops almost to zero, right? Because on a reasonable time frame, a reasonably high percentage of the people out there are going to be getting this virus, if not everyone. So delaying it is, as they say, delaying the inevitable. And so, you know, Joe Allen points out that now teachers, parents, they might be a much higher risk than students, but they've had access to the vaccines now. They have access to it. There's no point in delaying it anymore. And as I have often pointed out, for that vanishingly small population who really want the vaccines but can't get it, right? And that's really small, because normally the people who want a vaccine but can't get it, those are people like organ transplant recipients, or people who suffer from, you know, diseases like similar to AIDS, where they compromise your immune system and you cannot get a vaccine because of that. Those people, because of the nature of mRNA vaccines, they actually can take the vaccine this year, and they can benefit from it, and they have taken it and benefited from it. So it's really a vanishingly small number, as Joelle points out, of people who want the vaccine or want certain protections but can't take it. And then Joe points out, just like I have, that for those people, there are gas masks, there are respirators, there are N99s. There is actual real isolation for that vanishingly small number of people. There are ways for them to protect themselves if they need to do that, right? And of course, Joe Allen points out, for adults who remain unvaccinated, the Delta variant will find them eventually. That was a quote. It will find them eventually, meaning there's no point in delaying. So, great article here by Joe. Now, the third piece of this podcast, I said, was going to be where we talk about the reaction to this brave piece from Professor Allen. And the reaction on Twitter, as you can imagine, has been mixed, shall we say. Some people are supporting him, like Monica Gandhi out there in San Francisco. She has given him two snaps up. But other people have said, you know, you're crazy. What are you doing out there? This is you're endangering us all. Well, he quotes Ezra Klein, who was talking about an article that Joe Allen published earlier this year. And Ezra Klein points out, just like Monica Gandhi did, they seem to love this word cavalier. They say Joe Allen is not being cavalier, right? And then Ezra Klein points out that Britain, the government doesn't require masks for children in schools, and it probably won't even, or may not even, advise kids to get vaccinated either. And what's to say that the American experts are any more knowledgeable than the British experts, right? Are we that, you know, bigoted nationally that we will only listen to our experts? We totally discount the British experts. So as Ezra points out, we need to find some sort of off-ramp. We need to find some sort of end goal. And you have to decide, right? If you think that you are going to be able to reduce this virus to nothing and completely get rid of it and have it disappear, then that implies you should do one strategy. But if, much more realistically, you understand that the virus is going to be with us forever. Sandlot forever, right? Remember? With Hercules. So if it's going to be with us forever, then that implies that you should follow a certain different strategy. And of course, then people are also quoting Ross Adutat from New York Times has an article on a similar topic up just today, talking about how will blue state America live with COVID. And he says, you know, the reasonable endpoint is that they can maybe, you know, in blue states, volunteer to mask themselves up a little bit more in the winter or when there's a surge in cases, and none of the permanent emergency measures. But then he says he doesn't know if that's going to be what it is. He can also envision a future where the blue states live forever in masks and have terrifically onerous burdens placed on the residents of their states in response to this. And he says in some part he thinks it could be because they just want to stick it to the red staters and they want to try to shame the people in the red states into behaving well and say, look, we're doing all this. It's bio theater. It's pandemic theater. And even though they know the masks don't help, and even though they know the masks are going to hurt kids, even though they know the AAP declared a mental health crisis yesterday, they're still going to do it out of spite, just to show the people in the red states how bad and how evil those people in the red states are. So that's Ross's take on this. And that, of course, has been discussed in social media as well. So that's it. That's the state. People are arguing over how to end, how to wind down the response to this pandemic. And the basic question seems to be not really how can we wind it down, because the people who are in favor of winding it down are like Joe Allen here, saying we just have to end it by January 1st. That's it. Get rid of the mask mandates. And other people that say, you know, that are arguing on the other side, they're not really saying we should end it at all. The real argument is not how to end it. The real argument is between should we end this pandemic response or should we continue it in perpetuity? I think it's pretty clear that we need to end it right now. It's not a coincidence that a adolescent health crisis was declared yesterday, mental health crisis. I remind you, 240% hospitalization rate increase for attempted suicide in my school last year. Nationally, we have 50% attempted suicide rate increased among adolescent females. It's bad out there, folks. It is really bad. And it's our kids that we are hurting. And I submit to you that in a rational, kind society, it is not expected that people sacrifice themselves for each other, much less the young sacrificing for the old. In fact, if anybody is going to be sacrificing themselves, I feel it would be much more honorable for the old to sacrifice for the young. Not that I advocate for self-sacrifice under any conditions. But if you're going to have it, certainly it seems to make more sense that the old would be willing to help out the young. That's going to be it for today. Remember to subscribe, remember to comment, remember to find me on Twitter, ADK Homeroom. I hope you have a splendid day. See you tomorrow, Friday, for the dumbest pop culture moments of the week and Poetry Friday. Take care.